Welcome back to our statewide conversation. To learn about the pandemic we are living through, we get a chance to talk with statewide leaders. Lieutenant Governor is away this week, and in a moment, we're going to welcome back Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division for the Minnesota Department of Health, Chris Ehresmann. It's your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Heidi Holton. I'm live from KEXC Studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks for tuning in today. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. We are teaming up with community radio stations of Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you this COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Chris Ehresmann, thank you so much for your time today and being back with us. I appreciate it.
Happy to join you.
Well, let's talk numbers at first. I just took a look at the Minnesota Department of Health's website, and it looks like we have a higher number again of increases since yesterday.
Yes, we added 1,099 cases yesterday, so we're at 87,807 total cases.
Okay.
So large increase. And, you know, one thing that I did for our staff was, you know, we keep moving forward and we keep talking about the new cases and, you know, how we're concerned about this high number of cases that we're seeing. But I thought it might be interesting for them to look back. And so I looked at, today is September 18th. I looked at May 18th and July 18th. So, 4 months and 2 months ago, respectively. And on May 18th, we had 11,540 cases. So 4 months ago, we were just over 10,000 cases. 2 months ago, in July, we were at 46,201 cases. And now we're knocking on the door of 90,000 cases in just 4 months. So I think that's really an important way to maybe frame this is that, you know, we're seeing a lot of disease transmission in Minnesota, and that definitely is concerning.
Yeah, I want to talk to you more about that from an article from the Star Tribune that mentioned the governor and his thoughts. But I actually want to start out today because later today in northern Minnesota, both President Trump and Vice President Biden are going to be holding political rallies. Or I don't think Biden's is a rally, but there are protests to these visits also planned. I know President Trump does not require masks at his rallies. Vice President Biden does. I wonder if you could just tell us kind of the reality of public events like these, what we should know, and what kind of transmission Minnesota has seen from public events.
Well, certainly we have seen transmission. Whenever you have large groups of people gathering together, the potential for transmission is much greater. And we do have guidance in the state that requires, you know, people in indoor settings are supposed to be masking. I realize that, you know, people may not do that out of protest, but the bottom line is the reason that we recommend that is because gathering together in large groups really is a dangerous thing to do. We looked at Sturgis. We had 51 direct cases from that, three hospitalizations, one death. We have 18 secondary cases right now and 5 tertiary cases, meaning the cases continue to spread. We had a large wedding outbreak where we're at 77 cases now and one hospitalization. So we definitely recognize that bringing people together is dangerous. And so, you know, we'll be monitoring what happened following these events. The governor did provide guidance to both campaigns about, you know, what our asks were in Minnesota, what our expectations were in terms of community mitigation measures.
We're talking with Chris Erisman today about the state's response to COVID-19. I've seen some people in response to these kinds of events on social media say it's the events outside, masks aren't necessary. I've also seen people say that there isn't any proof that masks work. Will you kind of address that for us?
Sure. Well, a couple things, you know, and we addressed this at the in-person media briefing that we had a few weeks ago, but we realized that, you know, when we've talked about the fact that being outdoors is much better than being indoors in terms of disease transmission, that does not mean that being outdoors means there will not be disease transmission. That just means that all things being equal, it's much better to be outdoors because of sunlight and airflow and the ability to space yourself out more widely. But yeah, being outside is not in and of itself, you know, a means to eliminate the risk of disease transmission. And certainly wearing masks when you're in a group, you know, is the way to go, particularly because you're not, this is not getting together with a neighbor where you set out your lawn chairs 6 feet apart and you're chatting and, you know, you don't have your mask on. This is coming together with many, many people from many different households. And while everyone may have the intent of social distancing, that'll likely be challenging even being outdoors with so many people.
And what about the proof about masks that they work?
Oh,
it stops.
Sorry. Yes, there has been evidence, and one of the examples that CDC published a number of weeks ago had to do with salons and you know, hairdressers. They had a situation where there were two hairdressers that were both positive. They saw a number of clients, and so there were a number of exposures, and obviously that type, getting your hair cut takes, you know, it's closer than 6 feet and longer than 15 minutes, and they did not see any transmission in those settings because both the stylist and the clients were masked. And so that was kind of a real-life field example of how masks can help us to reduce transmission.
You said two of them that had masks on actually had COVID and it wasn't transmitted?
Correct. Okay. The stylist, I'm running out of the correct name, hairdresser, stylist, beautician.
Yes.
But the person that was providing the service, both of those two individuals were positive for COVID and so infectious. They didn't realize that they exposed, you know, 100 clients and none of them developed COVID. And in all cases, everyone was masked.
Okay. Well, let's move into some questions about schools and the spread of COVID-19. We're hearing some confirmed cases in Minnesota at schools. Are schools having to change plans? Any data yet on classroom COVID cases?
Yes, we're hearing about a lot of activity that's occurring tied to the school setting. There's actually been more transmission, however, due to social events that have been held. So in other words, people having parties, you know, socializing outside of the school setting, and then bringing, you know, COVID into the school. And that's both educators as well as students. So we're following up on multiple situations like that. But I think it's important to remind people that, you know, even as we're being attentive to what could happen in the school setting, you know, so in other words, transmission in a classroom, what we've been seeing a lot is people that are being infected because of their social choices that are then bringing that infection into school. And it has resulted in a number of situations where the learning model has had to be adapted.
Okay. Well, I want to get to a question we got this week from Deb. She wrote to us. She lives in a very small town. It's about 500 or 400 people. She writes, the owner of the hardware store in our town will not allow his workers to wear masks, using the excuse that all his workers have health issues and they do not have to wear them. There's a sign on the door that says this. They even go so far as to make those of us who wear masks in the store remove them to look at the security cameras in case we might be robbing them. Is there a way to report them anonymously? I have to live here. We are already being harassed for wearing masks as we walk around town.
Yes, we actually, you can report that to the health department. The other option, because we do have a team that is looking at those types of situations. The other thing is, you know, certainly the Department of Labor and Industry follows up on concerns about workplace safety. I don't know if this is a situation in which the workers, feel that they are being put at risk or not. It sounds perhaps like they aren't. But yes, you certainly can reach out to the health department, and we can help with some follow-up.
And I suppose it would be an issue in a lot of situations that your questioning of something be anonymous so that they don't go to that. They're not going to go to that hardware store with Deb's name.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. I have gotten plenty of anonymous letters and things like that that we pass on to the group that is overseeing enforcement. And then they can do the follow-up. But, doesn't need to have a name and none of that is shared.
Okay. Well, the Minnesota Department of Health is beginning a 4-week push to offer free COVID-19 testing across the state. There's one in Itasca County coming up on Wednesday. Can you give us a little background on this, why you're doing this? Is there enough capacity to test? And what kind of things do you learn from these events?
The reason that we're doing it is that we want to make sure that people have access to testing in addition to this push to make testing available across the state. We are also looking at setting up some more temporary sites for testing located across the state. So the intent is that people have access to testing. We know that that can be a challenge, particularly in greater Minnesota. So yes, we have the capacity to do this, and the intent is that we want to make sure that we have testing available in multiple locations across the state so that everyone has access. And we do learn from these events. I mean, we learn about new cases, and it certainly can alert us if there's something that's going on in the community that may not have yet been detected through testing through the healthcare system.
And I know, at least for maybe for all the events, but they're free, you don't have to have insurance, you don't have to have symptoms either to have the test. Is that right?
Right. They are free. You won't be asked to pay. And, you know, even if you don't have symptoms, you can be tested. So if you feel like you have a reason to be tested, you can pursue testing.
Okay. Well, I want to get into what the Star Tribune reported on today with the governor. He is laying out some benchmarks for lifting the peacetime emergency in the state of Minnesota. And he says he is looking for decreases in positivity rates to under 4. He's also looking at the rate of infections tied to community spread. He wants that to be under 20%. Can you kind of help us understand what these numbers mean and where we're at right now, if we're close to that?
Well, what we talk about with community spread is we're looking at, you know, how many cases have been identified that can't specifically identify where they think they may have been exposed. So in other words, if I went to a party and someone at the party had COVID and now I have COVID, in my interview, I would be connected to a certain event. If I say, I don't know where I might have gotten it, that type of spread, that community transmission that is unknown, that's what we're concerned about. And it's been about 34% across the state. So that's a pretty high level of transmission. And then test positivity, that is looking at, of all the tests that have been conducted, what proportion of those have been positive? And so, in other words, you know, if you test 100 people and 50 of them are positive, you have a test positivity rate of 50%, and your concern is that, oh my goodness, there's a lot of disease out here, and we need to be concerned. We are currently seeing our test positivity rates. They've been at or above 5%. And so what we want to make sure is that we don't have so much transmission in our state that just about everybody who gets tested is positive. So those are what the measures are, and why it's important that those measures be lower.
And I suppose that's part of why there's going to be more access to testing through these free testing sites from the Department of Health. The negative tests will help with those rates, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly not trying to artificially adapt anything, but I think that we want to make sure that there's what having adequate or better access to testing really does is two things. One is it does make sure that if you're in an area where it may be harder to get tested through your medical system, you know, this is an option, because our number one goal is to identify cases early so that they know they're a case, so that they can be isolated, that their contacts can be quarantined. So that's really the focus of why we do this. But we recognize that certain areas, it's going to be harder for somebody to be able to do that with kind of the external assistance of testing opportunities. And certainly, you know, we look at this and we will look at the overall test positivity, for instance, for Itasca. And we'll be able to say, okay, great, you know, your test positivity was 3%, you're lower than the average. Or we might see, oh my goodness, your test positivity was 6%, that's much higher, we want to make sure we're looking at it. So those are the reasons that we're offering these additional testing opportunities.
You're listening to the statewide conversation on COVID-19. We are talking with Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health. We had some questions this week from listeners about vaccines. When a vaccine becomes available, realistically, how long will it take to get enough people vaccinated in our state to get something close to normal?
Well, I mean, one thing to keep in mind is that the challenge with vaccination is just that we're in a position where literally everyone in the state, everyone in the country is going to need to be vaccinated. So we anticipate that when the vaccine first becomes available, that the supply will be fairly limited. And so we're really planning for kind of three phases of vaccination. A first phase in which there's very, very limited supply, and that we're focusing on vaccination for, you know, critical workers, healthcare, that type of thing. And then we also want to expand from that to those populations who are at greatest risk of severe complications from COVID. And then the third phase would be when it's open to the general public. And I think it likely will take a number of months before we reach the point where everyone who wants to be vaccinated has the ability to be vaccinated. I just want to let people know that we're working, you know, hard. People are working at the federal, the state, and the local level to begin to plan for this, but this will be the most complicated mass vaccination that we've really ever attempted. It's far more complicated than what was done with H1N1, because we're going to have multiple different vaccines that have multiple different requirements, you know, the how long between doses, how they need to be stored, how they're mixed up and administered. So lots and lots of logistical challenges. So just so people know that, you know, the teams are working on this in Minnesota. We have to have a first plan to the federal government by October 16th. But even with all the work that everyone's doing, it promises to be a very complicated endeavor.
Okay. Well, it has been recommended that you should definitely get a flu shot this year. When's the best time to do that? And can a person have both influenza and COVID at the same time?
The best time to get a flu shot is whenever it becomes available in your community. So, you know, we're midway through September, and if your healthcare provider or pharmacy has influenza vaccine available, we would say please do take advantage of that. Our goal in having higher vaccination rates this fall is that because COVID and influenza share so many symptoms, it's going to be really important that we are having as many people protected from flu as possible, both to reduce the need to sort of parse out through testing, is this flu or is this is this flu or is this COVID? And also because we don't want to overwhelm our healthcare system. We know that during influenza season, healthcare really is very busy in response, and they're already responding to COVID. So the goal of vaccination is to kind of address both of those things. And to the question of can you have flu and COVID at the same time, I suppose it may be biologically possible. I think it's probably less probable that that would happen. But we are looking at how we can ensure that someone who presents during what we would term flu season with the symptoms that are similar to flu and COVID can get tested so they can differentiate. Is this flu for which we have some antivirals available? Is it COVID? So we're hoping that testing will help us do that.
And another question about vaccinations. What about pneumonia vaccinations? Would this reduce secondary complications?
Yes, there are recommendations for a pneumococcal vaccine. There are doses, or there is a series that's given to children, as well as there are doses or a series that's available for adults. And the intent of that is to reduce pneumococcal disease, which can be a secondary result of pneumonia. Pneumonia oftentimes, although it's viral, can lead to other bacterial infection. So you're weakened and it allows for other diseases to take hold. So yes, the recommendation for the pneumococcal vaccine stands, and it does help to protect against the secondary complications that oftentimes follow influenza, as well as just protecting against pneumococcal disease.
We heard from a few people this week. They're asking about travel and whether flying is safe. And we heard from John. He said he's traveling abroad alone soon to visit family. His plan is to get tested before he leaves, but he's wondering about when he gets back to Minnesota. He planned to take another COVID test, but would you recommend he quarantine from his partner who isn't traveling? What's the safest way to do this?
Well, So obviously the safest thing to do for COVID is to stay in your bedroom and never leave. But we recognize that there may be situations in which someone, you know, has a need to travel. And so certainly, you know, all of the precautions of distancing from other people, wearing a mask, I would focus on an airline that leaves the middle seat empty so that you have a greater chance of social distancing on the flight. And, you know, wherever you're traveling, you'd want to be cognizant of, you know, what is happening with COVID at that location. And yes, I mean, when you come home, it really, the incubation period is 14 days. And so even if you got tested, you know, the day after you came back and you were negative, you'd still have to consider that it could take a full 14 days before your body developed an infection from an exposure on your trip. So I would say yes to keep yourself isolated as much as possible from your partner who didn't travel would probably be a wise thing to do.
Okay. Well, we had another question about people kind of getting more lax because the pandemic's been continuing. People seem to wash their hands less. They're not always washing their masks. And then they had a question about, at first it was, we should wash our groceries or maybe leave them outside or quarantine our mail. Now that we know more about the virus being airborne, are these things still necessary?
Well, certainly, yeah, we are a little discouraged by the fact that so many people have taken a fairly lax approach to COVID. And so that certainly is discouraging from a public health standpoint. In terms of the question about, you know, quarantining mail and washing groceries, I think that over time what we've seen is that although those items have the potential to be a vector in transmission, that is not the focal point of where we're seeing transmission happen. And so, if you are focusing on, you know, washing your hands, wearing a mask, avoiding group gatherings, and staying 6 feet away from people outside of your household, that's where I would focus your energy at this point, based on our understanding of the most common ways that COVID is spread.
Okay. We had another question from a listener about our neighboring states. Wisconsin reported over 2,000 new cases. The Dakotas are making the national news for becoming new hotspots. Is that a concern for Minnesota, being so close to these states?
Yes, it is. In fact, we've seen some of our border counties, you know, increasing incidents in counties that border some of those states in Minnesota. So definitely, you know, that is a concern. And I think something for people to keep in mind is that in Minnesota, we have been hovering at very, very high rates of disease for a long time. We have not taken off like our neighboring states have, but we certainly have the potential to. I've likened it to walking along the edge of a cliff. We're happy that we haven't fallen off, but we're still on the edge of the cliff. We're stable, but we're not stable in a cornfield. We're stable on the edge of a cliff. And so we can look to our neighboring states, both because we want to be cautious and be attentive to potential for cross-border transmission, but also because they kind of serve as an example of what can happen.
And will that be where some of these new test sites might be, closer to our borders?
Yes, they're actually distributed across the state, but there are some near borders as well.
Okay. I have a this isn't a quick question, but it's quick. I'm going to pose to you. It's from the crew that puts this show together. They said that they've increasingly noticed how much politics play a big role in this pandemic. And they wondered of you, Chris, if that wasn't the case, how would things be different and what would you want to see done to stop the virus?
I think things would be very different. We had no idea going into this pandemic that we would expect to see such politicization of things and people unwilling to do just basic public health measures. And I think that if politics weren't involved, I mean, I think we would be in a much different place. I don't know that we would need to have done anything more than we've done, but we wouldn't be seeing the cases that we are, because we would have people that were following guidance. And so that would make a large difference.
Well, we have run out of time. That's Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health, Director of Infectious Disease, Epidemiology, Prevention, and Control Division. Chris, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This broadcast, a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation at kaxe.org. And if you have a question to ask the Lieutenant Governor or people like Chris Ayersman, you can email us, covid@ampers.org, or call 612-562-9898. 95. I'm Heidi Holton for KEXE, KBXE. Thanks so much for listening.